Welcome to Real Fix Reviews, like a book club for people who hate reading. This week we're doing one of James's favorite movie, Deer Hunter. We bring you movie news, and this week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens,
Hello.
And the man with no tan, Ryan Preston. This week we're doing the movie Deer Hunter. Does anybody have a description of this movie?
Ryan?
Yeah, I got it. Let's see here. An in-depth examination of the ways in which the U.S.-Vietnam War impacts and disrupts the lives of people in a small industrial town in Pennsylvania.
So, since I have a feeling Ryan's going to end up, at least by some of us, going to be defending, I'll go first. I got to say, I actually liked the movie. I got to apologize to Ryan because this has literally been a movie that I've heard so much bad stuff about that I just haven't watched it. But my main problem is the wedding scene is literally a third of this movie. It is the first act of this movie. And the one part you think that would be longer, the second act being the Vietnam War, was like 30 minutes, if.
No. Okay. All you really got to see of the Vietnam War was them in the encampment. And that was it. That scene only probably took 20 minutes.
Yeah, like,
15.
Yeah. And then the third act was basically Robert De Niro adjusting, trying to find the other, you know, his
Christopher
other.
Christopher Walken.
You know, the Three Musketeers, trying to find the other two.
Yeah.
But I really did enjoy this movie. I actually think age personally has made this movie better to me. I don't know why, but the feel of it.
You
looks...
mean your age?
Well, the age of the movie, you bastard. What do you think, Ryan?
Well, you know what, man? I was actually thinking about it. First of all, I agree with you on the wedding scene. For a 3-hour movie. I understand why they would do something like that as far as, you know, show the slice of life from home before you get into the thing. But just, we watched a wedding. Like, the whole friggin' wedding.
No. This movie would be, like, 12 hours if we watched the full Catholic wedding.
For sure. Well, and it was like Russian Orthodox.
Yeah.
Wedding too.
They could have done so much because I was thinking, okay, you're going to see them bowling, be with family, just a lot more. No, a third of this movie, literally a third, the first act
was wedding.
Is a wedding.
Yeah, it really was.
They went hunting.
But the reason I think, to answer your question, that it's kind of almost come back around as being great again. Or see, unlike you, I didn't really hear too many bad things about it. It was always one of those that everybody referenced. You know, with lines or whatever. And, you know, I started hearing about it, you know, knowing about this movie just through osmosis. But what I was thinking about was this generation now, you know, sort of yours and mine, have kind of come back around to the same kind of thing. I mean, it touches on, you know, sort of the tragedy. I think all of us know people who went to war recently. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Recently, and it's sort of a striking tragedy, you know. As I was watching this movie, like, oh shit, man, like, there are friends that I have that I can't talk to the same way I used to, you know. Yeah. And they don't want to talk to me the same way. I mean, you know, everybody kind of wants it to be like it was, but it's never going to be, you know. And it's a really, really bizarre thing to deal with, I think, on both sides, you know, of you know, people coming back from war, and then, you know, your friends and family, you know, trying to make everything, you know, okay, but it's, you know, but it might not be, you know, basically war is shitty. And
so I was thinking, I didn't realize it at the time, I probably should have thought about it, that the soldier in the hall, like the VA hall, mm-hmm. or whatever it is, That whole thing was foreshadowing future events.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think about it until the end, when I'm like, oh, the bastards, they basically explained the whole movie to you.
Yeah.
Without really necessarily giving it away. And I actually have to give credit to that, because I was trying really hard at first not to just hate it. So I literally just had to turn off my normal movie watching habits, which generally is to make fun of the movie or to do it. And that's really what made me like this movie, is just I literally just watched it as a movie fan, which I don't always do a lot, you know, because I'm picking about the movies, the scenes, the acting, the lines. And I'll be honest, I don't think I've ever seen a Christopher Walken movie, young or old, where he doesn't look like he's about ready to shank somebody. This poor guy is typecasted into being a psycho.
Well, that's
between Walken and De Niro, it's not hard to see why they became two of the biggest actors ever. Yeah.
Oh no, because they are the best actors in here. The most interesting tidbit of or factoid were John Cazale.
John Cazale, man, that dude. I was gonna bring it up if you didn't, but please feel free.
One thing that was amazing is he was actually dying of cancer at this.
This was his last movie.
Which is a shame, because I haven't seen a whole lot of other movies he's in, but you automatically hate this dude for being a little weasel.
You absolutely have seen every movie he's in, because he's been in five movies. Five movies have been nominated for Best Picture. Three of them won Best Picture, including this one.
But he's in this movie, he definitely plays a character you hate. But the most amazing thing is, I think there's in an interview, Robert De Niro said he was my acting partner. Like, that line right there was enough to like pretty much seal that guy in movie history. If one of the greatest actors of all time,
well, and he was Fredo in Godfather 1 and 2. He was so good in 1 that they made his role bigger in 2. He was, what was the guy's name? Stu, or wasn't Stan again, because that was his name in this one. In Dog Day Afternoon with Pacino. Him and Pacino were great friends. You know, matter of fact, he was dating Meryl Streep when he not only died, but when he was doing this movie. They met doing like Shakespeare in the Park or something way back in the day.
I've got to say about Meryl Streep too, in this movie, I mean, it was obviously her. I think her role, as far as acting ability, not everybody in this movie was believable as a character, as the person. Some people, I think you totally said, okay, this guy's playing a part. I think it was Meryl Streep, John Cazale, Christopher Rock, and Robert De Niro. I think those people, to me, were the people in that moment. It's like, okay, this is them. Yeah. I think they were the best actors in this movie.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, luckily for the movie, I mean, that's what it revolved around. What was interesting to me is how soon after the end of the Vietnam War this movie was made.
Yeah,
it was very brave.
It came out in 1978. It won Best Picture, I believe, in 79. But I mean, they must have been filming this movie in 77, which is 2 years, 3 years after.
Yeah, about that.
I think
that
75, wasn't it?
I don't know off the top of my head, but it's around about that.
Yeah, I think we went in 65, more or less. And I think we were out by 75, and Saigon fell in 75.
I think that's crazy and brave, especially at that time period, to release a movie that honestly is anti-war. This movie is anti-war. I mean, this movie is completely different than the Vietnam movie by John Wayne. Which is amazing, the fact they did this movie then.
Yeah, it is pretty. It was very close to after the war, and I think part of the reason why they won so many academies,
75. So this is 3 years after,
and nominated for a bunch of things, is because Hollywood was trying to kind of say we're sorry. I think there was a bit of that in this, and I'm gonna wait till Ryan can come back or what I go into my what I wrote.
Well, I would say far as you're sorry, I think
some of it was.
I don't necessarily catch as much as like the I'm sorry as much as I guess we get in some of the newer movies. But I could totally see on this movie the reason why I did it is there's it's just so much like extra storytelling, I think. Yeah. To me, that's the way I see it.
Okay.
And we're getting a lot of feedback, Ryan.
So, I'm actually going to bring up my notes on this film. And for you audience members out there, I don't cuss very often. So, I'm going to read it word for word what I wrote.
Oh, great.
Not on camera, you don't.
Fucking Deer Hunter, the longest damn movie ever made. One whole day is the shortest time frame that it has taken me to finish this film. I get why it won Academy Awards, but I still think it was the Academy's effort to apologize for Jodie Foster. Or, no, what was it?
Taxi driver?
I've drawn a blank. For getting treated the way they were when they came home.
Oh.
The story and the acting are really good, but it was done in a boring-ass way. I'm not done yet.
Jane Fonda.
Yes, thank you. This movie has always made me take extra credit or extra pains to just make it through. By the way, I would have killed the prize buck. Lastly, this movie would have been a hell of a lot shorter if they had just used 1911s instead of revolvers. Now, the other points I want to bring up.
Wow, that was a delayed reaction there.
It's because you got a little bit of delay.
There's a delay in the Skype, but yeah.
But I want to get back to some of the things you guys were pointing out, and I'm glad that you guys caught those things. The acting was really well done by the main characters. Now, the thing that bothered me the most, and has always bothered me the most about this film, is it bogs down and it drags quite a lot. Now, the reason why it does that is because, like you guys said, there's a lot that it is trying to tell us. Because there was a lot of things that were not put out in the open that, you know, PTSD. That's what a lot of these guys had when they came back. And then the fact that to, as Ryan said, to come back in and to see your friends who are trying to be like, hey, let's get back and have fun, when he's like, no, there's shit going on over there that you guys don't know about because you're all hiding your heads in the sand.
So I will disagree on there's a lot of bogging down. To me, the main bog down was the wedding, because to me, I was really hoping to see Vietnam, to see what happened to him. To me, that's where the main point that bogged down. The rest of the part, believe it or not, I was actually like, okay, let's see what happened next. I was actually excited to hear and see what happened and next. The only part I think that to me that was a little on the would you let it go already was Christopher Walken. I mean, I understand why, but he just, I don't know. There was something about him to find his friends, and I understand it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do, but
not what, to say that, by the way, I'd do the same thing if I was in his circumstance, but in the movie, it was just like, try to move on. You know?
The way I look at it is the fact that you don't know until you've gone to war. And you don't know what these guys feel like when they come back, and they know that there is these horrible atrocities going on in this area. And
there's a disconnect from what you can talk to people about.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of the things I actually liked about this movie was you saw De Niro and John Cazale, I think was one of the things that really I thought brought the difference is him and his friends were goofing around, having fun, and nothing they did cracked it. And I think the main changing point of his character was when he didn't kill the buck.
Yeah.
Which I think was an elk, actually, which I liked that. The fact that he's...
That was a deer. That was a 12-point deer.
Yeah.
Which I liked that part.
Didn't really say yet, yeah.
I actually liked that part because you saw he's like, I've done enough.
Yeah. I really liked that part. The hunt, the track. You know what I mean? And he had his fill of killing.
I think the pinnacle scene that a lot of people gloss over is when he's lying on the ground next to his buddies, they're dead.
Yeah.
He's lying there, and he wakes up, and he sees this Viet Cong take a grenade and throw it down in the hole with all those women and children, and that's the big picture right there, is when he's roasting the guy with a flamethrower. I wouldn't have shot him to kill him. I would have let him burn. But because that really shows you what a lot of these guys were seeing in there, that they didn't care. They were going to kill women, children. They were going to kill everybody that they could. And then you get into the next scene where they're in the POW camp. So there's a lot of things that coming from that back over here to where life hasn't changed, but you have.
See, I just thought of something, and maybe the reason why I was hoping more for Vietnam was I actually think that scene was too fast, too much.
Yeah.
Like, if they shortened the wedding by 10 or 20 minutes, made the Vietnam thing a little longer, I think it'd give you a little bit, like, slower pacing, enough to experience the ups and downs. And I think that's, to me, what would have showed what the character went through more.
But I want to point out something, because you keep on going back to the wedding. Now, the wedding, to me, being the first scene, even though it for me, the wedding scene is really bogged down. There's a lot going on. But they showing you and trying to get you to understand the life that this guy left.
How
it comes back.
I understood that halfway into the wedding scene. I mean, you saw these guys. You saw this guy's, you know, it was like the Four Musketeers. I mean, these guys were inseparable. I got that from almost the beginning, the way they interacted, the way they talked, the way they drank constantly.
Well, and also the wedding scene, it was too long. I definitely understood the point. I understand the want to do it, because it's almost like a horror movie. You have to show, like, a party. You have to show everybody having a good time, almost to contrast what's about to happen.
Yeah.
There were a few sort of foreshadowing things in that, and a few sort of, dynamics between friends that were shown. But it definitely could have been chopped up and brought in a little bit tighter. But for the entire pace of the movie, it seemed to kind of follow.
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to... I did just notice... Sorry, I want to go back to a previous point about, you know, he should have just moved on with his life. The way I think it was written, to me, I think it tripped the movie up a little bit. Mm. I realize the rest of the movie is about that, but part of that, to me, I think really tripped it up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. But
I kind of disagree. I liked what they showed of Vietnam. Like, it definitely...
Well, no, I meant after he get back and he was searching for his friend and...
Right, and then when he goes back to try to find Nick.
Yeah.
First of all, I have a question on how you get back into Saigon in 1975.
He came in with an embassy group, and that's how he got back in.
As a civilian, though, that's the part.
I don't know what capacity he went in either.
Because that was a fast jump. I mean, no, I agree. I didn't give it a whole lot of thought, but it's like one second he's in Detroit or Chicago or wherever area he's in, and then boom, he's back in Vietnam, and then boom, he's back home again at a funeral. It was just
There was a couple of scenes that bogged it down unnecessarily, and there were couple of scenes that slowed it down, I think, for good reasons, you know, to, you know, especially kind of right after he got home and a few of the sort of the quieter scenes when he's just kind of dealing with being back in his hometown.
I love when he skipped the party.
Yeah.
To me was like, oh, hell yeah. I would have told all my friends, I got home then, give me a week by myself.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to spend a week in Kentucky, bourbon.
So I want to mention something, because this, I think the best line of the entire movie is I-27, N-40, Johnny come lately, where are you, Johnny? Because he yells bingo. So he reads off all the numbers, and then he comes back and goes, that's a winner. Get out of my room, Jared Ivan Stiven. I can't see myself smoking. That would make me go back and be like, oh, I forgot about that one.
So I actually really liked this movie, and I have no doubt I'm going to get crap for some of the stuff I say, but go ahead and
then... Okay, the last thing I want to point out, and I tried to mention this to John last week, but John had never heard of the film. Ryan, did you know that this guy, the director, Michael Cimino, he did Thunderbolt and Lightfoot?
I know, yeah, I know.
I'm like, that kind of makes some sense in some of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't done much. I mean, he's done like a couple of foreign things, really, really not much. I think he stopped in like the 80s, mid-80s or something like that. But
I wish he did more, because I love, even though there's obvious complaints, overall, I actually really like this movie. I got through it, which, by the way, I've never been able to get through Apocalypse Now Redux ever. I own it. I've still never been able to watch it.
I have.
Yeah.
Because it's like 4.5 hours long.
Yeah, sure.
And I like this movie a lot better with lot better than Platoon. Obviously, it's about here than over there.
Yeah.
Overall, to me, this is a 4 out of 5. This was a movie that I actually enjoyed. I obviously have complaints. I do a movie show. Shocking. But no, to me, this is a solid 4 to 5. What about you, Ryan?
Oh, man, I have to totally agree. The one thing I didn't bring up was the freaking music. Really good.
Oh, yeah.
It was really, really good.
And it matched really well. It
was great. I love the bookends of the hunts. You know what I mean? The first hunt as opposed to the second hunt.
Yeah.
And the change of character, too, with the bullet scenes. Yeah, like, this is it.
Because it really drives home, you know, like the difference, you know, like this bright-eyed, you know, like guy who's wanting to serve his country and go out there and thinks it's going to be one thing.
And really excited to do it.
Yeah, trying to talk to the Green Beret guy, like you said. I mean, that foreshadowing was brilliant.
Yeah, and it was almost it was kind of hunt.
Yeah, the second hunt was such a perfect contrast to the first one. It kind of summed up sort of everything, without explaining it. You know,
I would also say that it seemed to heal everything too. If you notice, like, when he came back after the buck and you know, threw the gun away and all that, you could see, I think, the character kind of let his guard down. Mm. You notice I don't think he wears uniform as much. And obviously I think the next scene was like the funeral, but you know what I mean? I just seemed he a little bit more comfortable, but so what'd you give it, Ryan?
4 for sure.
4 to 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Very obviously, you know, I mean, fuck, it might be a 5 without the long ass wedding scene.
So this is the one I've been honestly waiting for. So James, you're up.
Well, the thing I have to say is that for me, this is an excruciatingly long film, and I've already seen it before. And the point of our show is for people like Ryan, who's never seen the film, never seen Deer Hunter before, to be like, you know, that's one I need to see. And as long as you stick with it being a one-time event, I think it's fine. So, like you guys said, there's a lot of great things about it, but I can't do a 4.
That's a hell of a preference. It's a 3.5. By the way, that's the longest preferencing for your vote, for your score.
It's a 3.5. And that's me being generous.
And so we're going to...
Watch it once. Don't watch it twice.
So we're going to switch to this week's... So we're going to switch to this week's TV show, which is Sense8. And I'm going to go first and going, oh my God, what an opening scene. This the best scene in the entire show starts it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really literally makes you go, what the hell did I just watch? And it doesn't really...
And you know what, let me actually preface before we kind of jump into this, because I don't think we've necessarily explained kind of our train of thought when it comes to this particular segment when we're doing sort of like the pilot episodes of these shows. Pilots in general are a little bit different than when the show gets moving along. So we're looking for slightly different things when it comes to a pilot versus, you know, like an entire season one of a show. The pilot has to explain a lot more than everything else does. You know, it's the introduction to everything, and it's pretty much how they execute that introduction and then how much information they're able to give you after you know sort of your main players and things like that.
Yeah, and it has to balance
tone also.
And it has to draw you in too.
Right. It has to be intriguing enough in the premise and in you know, good clever writing and stuff like that, but at the same time you're definitely not going to get what you do, you know, with like the first act of a movie or something like that. It's you know, it's more to kind of draw you in and, you know, see if you can keep going. But it's really hard to, you know, kind of judge where it's going to go off of a first episode.
So,
but
are you going to talk about this week's show?
Eventually.
I was just wondering.
You know, this
trying to explain.
The show's not an hour. No.
I liked it. First of all, I love the Wachowskis, who we're not supposed to call the Wachowski brothers anymore. Totally respect that.
Wait, so I didn't know they did this?
Yeah.
No, I'll be honest. I didn't see that, but that, okay, that makes so much more sense
on certain things. The tranny?
And the color, well, I'd say the color palette, honestly, and kind of the way they foreshadowed a lot of things, and they did similar things in The Matrix, the first one. You can skip the second and third one, but...
Shoot yourself.
Hold on. Don't just listen to that shit. I'll defend those movies.
Well, one day we'll have to when James and I can stomach watching the second and third one.
We got through the Animatrix in there, too.
Dope. The third one is the only one I'll even acknowledge an argument for.
Oh, well, okay, so get onto this thing before this show before.
Well, I liked it. It was again a lot of explanation, a lot of, but it didn't try to explain it. You know, like this is exactly what's happening. It intrigued you enough to where, like to me, I kind of want to see where this is going. It didn't have enough, or it didn't have too much of like supernatural stuff that it's trying to throw at you. It wasn't
heavy handed. I'll
see what worked.
I'd say it wasn't heavy-handed, which I think sometimes on a show of that's I can guess has a lot to it is pretty amazing. Just to give you the initial thread, and they'll just tighten it up as the show goes on. And so, what are you gonna say, James?
I was wondering what Ryan really thought about the Van Damme van.
It's the damn van.
Van Damme van. I love all those vans. I love the idea of that whole situation.
Yeah. Here's a chicken.
But give me an egg. It's actually kind of interesting the way they're going all over the world like that. You know, sort of obviously a lot of places that we don't know how everything works. So I mean, like the slice of life from like these eight different places is kind of interesting.
Yeah. So James, what'd you think of it?
I've already seen it before. I got in episode 5.
So are you going to get to what you thought about it?
Entertaining.
Entertaining?
That's about it.
Okay. Well, I guess it's entertaining. And so,
at times.
Well, make sure you stay tuned. Anybody know what we're going to do for next week's?
Yeah.
Okay. TV show. That's good.
Yeah. Do I need to tell you now?
Well, save it. Just making sure.
You sure you want to? You sure?
Yeah.
I can tell you now.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, just want to let you know, we do have a Facebook page. You love us, like us, hate us, give us an email. We'll write you on air. Like the latest guy who said our review of Buffalo 66 was weak. I would think the movie was, personally. You watched the review. You know our opinion.
Bro, do you even lift?
And so just let you know. Or also, you can donate to the cause. You can also donate to Old Guy Tech TV, Pause for the Cause, to help keep the lights on.
Give me money.
And so this week was Ryan's pick. So, Ryan, do you have any movie news, or do you hand it over to one of the other two?
Oh, I delegated this to James.
Okay. All right. So, you know, I was looking through this news, and then there was something that popped up about somebody's really bad luck. Mark Hamill almost died filming this new Star Wars.
Whoa.
He fell.
Was this when he broke? No, that was Han Solo who broke his leg.
Yeah, but this one, he was doing something scaffolding. He was high up, trying to do a stunt, and almost fell to his death. He's okay.
I wonder if they're going to have to write his injuries into the movie like they did in Empire.
Yeah. I don't know, but, dude, like, take it easy. I know you're a libtard, but come on.
He doesn't chicken anymore, and we need him to do more Joker voices.
Yes.
Exactly. And I got one just because I think this is funny. So any of you see the new Fantastic Four movie? I haven't. No. Kate Mara can't stop poking fun at it. She thinks she plays the Invisible Girl.
Oh, it's the wife from Marky Mark's buddy in The Shooter.
Yeah.
And she was also in one that we just watched, House of Cards.
I love the fact that she's talking shit about a movie that not only bombed, it may end the movie franchise. It was so bad.
Yeah.
I wish more celebrities would actually say, hey, that movie sucked. Like, if Elizabeth Berkley said how bad Showgirls was, she'd probably have a career.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you know, maybe. unfortunately, I mean, a lot of actors, well, shit, not a lot. I mean, there's probably three actors in the world who can actually like just get rid of parts that they don't want to do and only take the ones that are perfect for their career. Most everybody else, I mean, they're it's their job. You know what I mean? No. So I don't necessarily try to begrudge anybody's need for money.
Well, no, don't get me wrong.
For 2 years.
Well, don't get me wrong. I mean, you're an actor. You got to do movies. But I think if you could lighten up and poke fun at the movies that obviously either were goofy or didn't do good, I think that would, you know, for one, I think that would help people's career with normal people, probably not Hollywood.
Well, I think so. I think the zeitgeist is changing a little bit where that's going to be a little more acceptable. But, I mean, a lot of times, you know, you can't badmouth a movie that you're in because you have to work with some of these people again.
Yeah,
you know, it's politics, and if enough time goes by, then you can bitch about some weird movie you were in the 80s. But it's changing a little bit with the AMAs on Reddit and all these, you know, sort of wider spread internet shows and interviews, and everybody's a little more out there. And everybody kind of sees behind the curtain a little more than they used to. It's not movie magic anymore where it's like, I wonder how they did that. Everybody can kind of look the shit up on YouTube if they want.
It's true. It's just like Harrison Ford, that the improv scene. Instead of sword fighting, he shoots the guy in Indiana Jones. Apparently he was pissed for years that everybody actually knows that. He didn't want it to know that it was something he did because he was really sick.
And he was tired from running around all day. So by the time he got to the guy, he just kind of ad-libbed it, and, you know, kid stays in the picture.
It was one of the greatest things ever. So next week is our theater pick, and anybody actually know what movie we're doing?
I thought it was Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah, Rogue Nation.
Yeah.
So it's another movie of Mission Impossible. They run around, save the world, shenanigans happen, but all good things and masks win. So what are we doing for the TV show?
J.J. Abrams, and he's the one that kind of redeemed the franchise from John Woo's dumbass.
I agree, and thank you.
So what we're going to be doing is...
Dust and Fire.
Archer.
Okay. So episode one?
Yeah.
Cool.
Because they're on, like, what, season six?
Or more.
I think it's only season six.
Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first episode of Archer?
Yep.
And next week we're doing Rogue Nation, another Mission Impossible movie starring Tom Cruise doing more stunts than he probably should do at his elderly age.
Dude, he's an Olympic athlete.
A short one.
Just ask him.
Yeah, rest assured you will be able to see him on a motorcycle without a helmet, as per usual.
Which, at least for the state this is filmed in, is highly illegal.
Yeah,
right. But I think he's contractually obligated to ride a motorcycle without a helmet. In all,
I wonder. I've never seen Days of Thunder. Did he do in that one?
Yes, he had a helmet.
Yes.
Okay.
I wonder if it was like the Fonz, where the motorcycle was actually not going anywhere, and they were pulling him on a. So with that being said, I gave Deer Hunter a 4 to 5. Ryan gave it a 4 to 5. James gave it a begrudgingly 3 out of 5. 3.5 out of 5.
You're lucky.
Next week is Rogue Nation and Archer episode 1.
Hold on.
And as always, thank you for watching. We'll be right back.